Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and my guest today is Dr. Lee Kaufman, and she is in Australia, and I'll get to her in a moment. Our topic is called Ruptured, but I would just like to dedicate today's program to all those who have lost their lives in Israel since October the 7th, 2023, and to the hostages still held in Gaza. I also need to just go back to last week's program. I got a lot of messages asking me how they can get hold of Mark Leach. It's L-E-A-C-H. You can get hold of him on LinkedIn. There are plenty of his posts on Instagram and on YouTube. And never again is not one word. It's never again is now. So you'll find him there. Thank you for all your comments, and I'm so pleased that you enjoyed him. I also want to thank my very good friend in Sydney, Judy Erwig, who told me about your book that's just come out, yours and Tamar Paluch's. And that's why I contacted you, Lee. So welcome to South African Airwaves. We actually go around the world also, so you've got a lot of people listening in today. How are you?
How wonderful to be here. Thank you. And I love the dedication that you just made.
Oh, good. You know, after yesterday's attack in Jerusalem on the bus, I think it's just every day something else shocks us, quite honestly. And absolutely. What I would like to know from you, that we are now going, Elie Wiesel said it takes time to digest tragedy. Do you believe that that's true? It does take
It takes time to digest tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I've been a writer all my life, and Ruptured is my ninth book, and this is the first time that I wrote and edited stories as well about something happening in real time and still has no ending to this. My motto up until recently has been always, as a writer, that you have to have some kind of distance from your pain before you turn it into something creative. But here we just don't know when will be the ending, and it felt so urgent to create something to document something as it unfolds, right? The history as it unfolds right now, because it just feels, because Jewish voices are so silenced at the moment, or so selectively handpicked and unrepresentative across a lot of the media in the world and social media, it just felt to us that we just don't have time to wait as we normally would, perhaps with a creative book.
And we're going to get back to that.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and my guest today is Dr. Lee Kaufman. And Lee, I didn't even introduce you properly. You are a writer. You run workshops, creative workshops. You've had 8 books that you've already published, plus a lot of non-creative materials that you have done. And you've also...
Fiction.
Yeah, absolutely. And you won many awards, a blogging award, and it's quite amazing what you actually have done. So how did you get involved? I want you to talk about your latest book, which you did with 36 essays from Jewish women around Australia. And it's called Ruptured. By the way, it's not in South Africa yet, but it's the most beautiful cover. My gosh, the cover just gives you goosebumps. Tell me how did you get involved?
Sure. Can I just say that the book is called Ruptured, and the subtitle, as you said, Sue, of course, and the subtitle is Jewish Women in Australia Reflect on Life Post October 7. So it's actually, the idea for this book came from my co-editor Tamar Paluch. She was my student in one of the memoir courses that I taught. And that's how we knew each other. And she invited me on board to edit this book. And it came to me at the time when I really needed it. Tamara didn't know this when she offered it to me, but I really needed it because, as you said before, so before Raptured, I already wrote and edited 8 books. Raptured is my 3rd anthology, so I wrote 6 books of my own and edited 2 anthologies as well, both in Hebrew and in English. But since October 7, I just lost the stamina to write, or maybe not even the stamina, I just lost the mojo to write. It wasn't a writer's block. It's not like I didn't have topics, so I couldn't do it. I just really lost my belief in the power of the written word, because as I suspect you would, you probably found it too in your own country. After October 7, immediately after October 7, before Israel even retaliated, when Jews in Australia who have a lot of connection to Israel, you know, a lot of family there, were really sort of shell-shocked, wounded, grieving. The literary community to which I belonged for many years remained silent. I did get quite a few private messages, quite a lot actually from different friends, but publicly nobody condemned what happened.
Was it a mixed group of people?
So I'm talking about the literary world in Australia generally, in which I have been involved, which is, you know, the writers of Australia, you know, there's a lot of them, men, women, different sexual orientation, different ethnic backgrounds. But, you know, Australia is a small country still, even though it's big in size. And so the literary community here is relatively incestuous. Everybody knows everybody. I've been involved there for over 20 years. So, as I said before, I did get a lot of messages privately, but publicly people remained silent. And in fact, soon after October 7, even before Israel started the war on Hamas, already justification started to come out, like from some writers, and then later letters signed contextualizing what happened on October 7. And so I really kind of lost my belief that written words matter, because if people who are supposed to be nuanced thinkers, people who are supposed to really sort of look at complexity of situations, could so in such tribal way just react to a conflict which is so complex. I lived in Israel for 14 years, and I still don't quite understand all the history of the conflict. So I just thought of why to write. But then when Tamar came on board and asked me to do this book, which was about, I would say, 7 months after October 7, by that point, I was already feeling actually not so much reluctant to write as voiceless, because nobody would by then platform me as a, you know, I'm really probably the only Israeli Australian writer with a public profile I know of. And I used to be on the circuit of writers festivals. I used to launch a lot of books by writers who were younger than me or more beginning than me. I used to judge awards, but you know, by then I kind of, nobody would even platform me because I'm an Israeli writer, I'm a Jewish writer. And so I just thought Raptured was a really wonderful way of inserting not just my own voice into the public conversation, but also voices of other women, many other women. Mm.
And so it must have meant a lot to you, because I was listening to an interview that you did, and you said that you used to be very pro two-state solution. So
that hasn't changed.
But so you must have shared that with your writers group. So, you know, you would have thought that they would have given you more support. But quite honestly, we found it here also, Lee. You know, by December, our government had already accused Israel of genocide and taken us to Israel to the ICC. And we felt so betrayed as a community, because as a Jewish community in every single small town or city that you come across in South Africa, the Jewish community has reached out to the greater community to assist them, to help build them up, to just be there for them. So all of a sudden, there was also this attack from our government against, we felt very betrayed. But you know, Viktor Frankl said, it is not the physical pain which hurts the most. It is the mental agony caused by the injustice, the unreasonableness of it all.
Yes. It's such a, I love Viktor Frankl. I'm glad you brought him up, Sue. And this quote really, really resonates with me. This is exactly where I was at the time when Tamara approached me to do this book, because I still passionately believe in two-state solution, but you said that I probably received support because of this from the literary community in Australia. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I think the talk in the so-called progressive circles to which I've always belonged here, I've been circulating in academy and the arts all my life, all my 26 years in Australia. The talk is no longer about two-state solution. It's more about one-state solution, you know, from the river to the sea. So, and look, I'm not saying that everybody in the arts feels this way, but the loud voices dominate the conversation. So I don't feel like I have a place there to say what I really believe. And that's one of the issues. And also, even before October 7, even though I was platformed a lot, to speak publicly about writing, about my books, about other people's books. Whenever there would be, like, for example, public events in the literary community, in writers' festivals about Middle East, which is a euphemism always for, you know, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, nobody ever asked me to come and speak, even though the rest of the speakers would usually be writers like myself, not politicians or political journalists. But actually, there wouldn't be many people who actually lived in Israel or know Israel to speak about it. So my opinion basically was not important in this.
So you were sidelined. We're just going to advert.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and we're just about to go on to a very short audio clip by Joanne Fedler, who was one of the 36 authors of Ruptured.
Hi, I'm Joanne Fedler, and I am one of the 36 authors who have an essay in this newly released book, Ruptured, edited by Lee Kaufman and Tamara Paluk. After the events of the 7th of October, I found that I had to retreat from social media. I couldn't withstand the onslaught of information that was coming to me and the way in which I felt betrayed by people around me. In this essay, I've had a chance to reflect on what it means to be Jewish in a world after the 7th of October, what it means to be a feminist, somebody who has spent my life fighting against violence. This book is a beautiful collection of stories and essays by 36 Australian women, and I encourage you to go out and get a copy.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and I'm back with Lee Kaufman. If you would like to WhatsApp us, do so on 061-895-1019. If you've got any questions for Lee, or if you want to be part of the conversation. Now, Lee, just the first of all, as you look at the book Ruptured, it's powerful. The front is absolutely powerful. Tell us a bit about how you came to what it looked like and explain what it does look like.
Oh, that's a hard one. Yeah. I'll try. So really, all the credit goes to our designers, who did the book. But our brief for the designers was we wanted to show some dramatic tale, some dramatic rupture, really. And so the book looks like, how would I describe it? It's like torn pages, but like...
It's amazing. I've been showing it to the people outside the studio here. They can't believe what it looks like. So for all our listeners, I really would suggest that you go on and look up the book, Ruptured, and you'll see what it looks like. It's powerful. The whole front is torn and ruptured. It really is. Now, you have a lot of people sending in messages in their stories. How did you advertise for that?
How did we get 36 contributors? Yeah.
No, you got, I think, 160 essays first.
So really, this whole project, which was Tamar's brainchild, started as kind of a healing, therapeutic, community, kind of inward-facing project, where Tamar thought it would be, we are in so much pain as a community, so maybe we'll invite women. We wanted to focus on women because of the sexual violence, you know, that characterized October 7, and also because grassroots activism that emerged after that in our community was really female-led, at least in Australia. I don't know how it's in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to give women space to process their emotions, to process their experience by writing those essays. And the form was very contained, so the brief was to write up to 2,000 words maximum. So as you said, exactly as you said, so we received 150 submissions roughly from the community. From those submissions, we picked about 20 essays that we felt represented the most the diversity of Australian Jewish community, because we really wanted voices of women from regional areas as well, from different sexual identities, from different ethnic backgrounds. So, for example, we have Indian Iraqi contributor. We have a schoolgirl who is 16 and she is queer. We have a female rabbi. So it's a real diversity there. Mm. And then the remaining roughly 16 essays, we just approach specific women in Jewish community with high profile whose stories we wanted, or not always with high profile, but just particular specific, again, stories we wanted, again, to showcase this diversity.
And when you were reading these different essays, did it begin to free you yourself and your block, your writer's, well, as you say, you're not going to call it a writer's block, but perhaps it was a hurt block, a block of being hurt?
Great question. So by the time me and Tamar and two other women on our committee, Simone Wine, who is a contributor, and Romy Moshinsky, who helped to design the cover, by the time the four of us sat down to read those 150 essays, I already was writing. I was writing my own essay for the collection. I was writing also, I write a bi-monthly column for the Jewish Independent Media, which is in Australia, but it's also read internationally. But what I did experience when I read those 150 essays, to be honest, is a real PTSD because, you know, it's really, I mean, the pain was so raw, so palpable. We didn't, and rightly so, and I'm really glad what women who wrote to us did not hold back, because I think they really needed to process this. But then what we did with this essays that we selected, and with the other essays that we, you know, harvested, solicited from women. We really, Tamar and I, worked as editors very hard to make sure that this really, this raw pain, this all these emotions, then, you know, we help the contributors to sort of get a bit of a distance from them and make them more palatable. And I'm really happy to say that the final collection, I mean, of course, it's not for me to judge, but my feeling as an editor is that the final result is a book that is not shying away from tough material, but also a book that allows light into this darkness. Mm-hmm. It was very important to us to also focus on the fact that our community is suffering, but it's a resilient community, it's a powerful community, and that the women who contributed to our book, as many other women who are not necessarily in our book, and as many men in the Jewish community, know how to find joy in the darkness. I mean, you know, the rabbis throughout centuries have always been telling us that it is a Jewish duty to rejoice during darkness. Mm. That's our form of resistance. And that's something that really runs through the book as well.
The one story I just saw, the headline was, "Who Will Look After My Daughter?" Tell me a bit about that one.
Exactly. Who will hide my daughter?
Who will hide my daughter? Yes.
Yes. Yes. Who is a known playwright and a musician in Australia? So that's a very moving essay. In fact, one non-Jewish book reviewer who read this book particularly connected to this essay. And it's a short essay, but it's a story of the turmoil into which Galit descended just after October 7, and how she became. And look, it's not necessarily rational. I mean, a lot of us had all this sort of magical and rational thinking just after October 7 because it was such a life-shattering really experience. But she writes about how she became overcome by thoughts of what if another Holocaust happened, if something happened in Australia, what would she do with her daughter? Who out of her non-Jewish friends would hide her child the way, you know, some non-Jewish people hid Jewish children in the Holocaust? And that kind of became almost like a test to her friendships.
Wow, that's powerful. And of course, Australia have got the biggest Holocaust group that came after the Second World War, after the Holocaust.
Yeah, I think we are the third country in the world after Israel and America who has the highest sort of Holocaust survivor number. I hope I'm not misrepresenting this. Now, we were very mindful of that. So while the Holocaust theme is definitely something that is recurring across quite a few essays, not necessarily as the main theme, but it's a refrain that comes in and out, we also wanted to, again, represent diverse experiences in our community. So while a lot of our contributors are children or grandchildren of Holocaust survivors, an equal number, probably about half of them, are also not. So we also have people like myself who, I was born in Russia, in the Soviet Union. Yes. So I spent my childhood in the Soviet Union. So my family was lucky in that we didn't experience Holocaust, but my grandfather served in Second World War. So I came to Australia in my 20s. We had some contributors who have lived in Australia for generations. In fact, one of them, even Kim Rubenstein, Professor Kim Rubenstein, can trace her family to one of the first convicts who arrived in Australia.
That's fascinating.
And then we have also stories, like I mentioned before, about Ilana Benjamin, whose parents are Iraqi Indian Jews, which is a very small and unique community that came to Australia. So she's first generation migrant here. So while the Holocaust is definitely a dark cloud that kind of comes in and out of essays, it's not the main focus of the book.
And then Lee, with in Australia, I mean, you've had the. Sorry, yes.
But just kind of to say that intergenerational trauma really is something that almost all contributors reference, because the intergenerational trauma does not come just from Holocaust.
No.
I mean, as you know better than me, Sue, probably, you know, it's centuries and centuries for all of us in one form or another.
Absolutely. And, you know, quite a bit has been written about vicarious trauma and how, when, you know, what's happened, for instance, on the 7th of October, the trauma that Jews worldwide are feeling. And it goes very deep. I myself am a convert to Judaism by choice. And I have also found it very strange, the people who have reached out to me, and the others who obviously are thinking, well, you know, it's not really her religion kind of thing. Never mind that I've been Jewish, I think, for 45 years or something.
Wow. Well, you know, in this call, you're absolutely right. And I think for people who have not lived through intergenerational trauma, they can't always grasp what October 7 means to Jews in diaspora. So, for example, in one of our book launches in Australia, we've had a few of them and we're still going. When we had audience question time, a woman asked me the following question. It's a non-Jewish woman who I think was born in England. And she said, look, I just don't understand why October 7 has been so traumatic for Jewish people. I mean, when 2005 bombings happened in England, in London, I wasn't as traumatized. And so to say this is completely, of course, misunderstand the whole context, the whole event, and the whole past we come from. But it's really interesting that since Raptured came out, I find myself engaging in a lot of conversations like this with non-Jewish people to explain them that for us, especially that it was the biggest one massacre of Jewish people in one day since the Holocaust, for us it's much more complex. Doesn't matter where we live, and we're also connected through families, so many of us, to this country. Mm-hmm. And it's also from so many of us, I don't no longer have a family there, I just have friends, but it's for me still a kind of place of refuge, to which I know, having experienced really severe antisemitism in the Soviet Union, and I'm still very grateful to Israel, who took my family in. For me, it's still really, even though I chose eventually to move to Australia, it's really meaningful to know there is this city of refuge somewhere. So when this city of refuge became attacked so savagely, it really does shatters you. Just as you get shattered by what you see happening in Gaza, it's also absolutely shattering. But people don't understand that we can hold pain on both sides. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of also one of the reasons what Tamara and I wanted to do this book, because we felt so misrepresented as a community, where people would assume that if you're Jewish, you don't ache for the other side as well. And so there's a lot of sort of engagement there with the fact that Jewish community have experienced enormous pain since October 7th for themselves, for people in Israel, and also for the Palestinians who, as a result, were so, devastated.
Absolutely. And I think that's part of that vicarious trauma, is the images that we're seeing coming out of Gaza as well. We are sometimes without even realizing it, we are absorbing all that pain as well. And I think that's where this book is absolutely amazing, because it gives an outlet to express what that pain is. It's not that silent scream, which is inside most of us since the 7th of October, that silent scream of how could this have happened, and how does it go on happening? I have a lot of family living in Israel, and, you know, so I must admit, I question almost every day, how can this be going on? And but on quite an amusing note, I must tell you, that flotilla that's going with the young girl, I'm not going to give her any advertisement advertising on Chai FM, but the young girl who's going on the flotilla going towards Gaza, I read something very funny yesterday. It was a man who's not Jewish, from Spain, and he went and he sailed alongside them, playing as much of the music that he could of Israeli music and very loudly as he was going next to them. I loved that. I thought, you know what, we do have support that comes in odd places, even if it's someone on a yacht playing Israeli music, you know.
Wow, I love this story. So it's really very interesting. And, you know, that's really, I mean, why another reason why we wanted to do Raptured so much, because we wanted to build these bridges with non-Jewish people. We wanted to reach across the divide. We wanted also to speak to those people who already are supporting us and understanding that you don't have to choose a side. You can act with both sides. And it's been amazing to see how many people in Australia, the book sold out, the first print sold out in the first two and a half weeks to our surprise, and it's now in reprint, and it's been amazing to see how many non-Jewish people actually bought this book and keep reaching out to us, and the amazing conversations that emerge from them reading this book. I have even people sort of sending me messages from Barcelona, from Canada, from every, it's really interesting the life it has taken on,
which is amazing. And I see also that when you first launched the book, you launched it on the 1st of August, I think. So I mean, already it's sold out, you're saying, and it's second print.
Yes, I mean, the second print run, it just hit the shops a week ago.
And I've phoned a few bookshops here and told them to get their act together and get it in.
It's also available on Amazon. I mean, a lot of people have been buying it on Amazon internationally. Mm. Yeah, but it would be great to get it to
I saw it in on Amazon. Now, when you actually were launching it, I see that you said this was the most extraordinary experience of this first launch of my ninth book, Ruptured, which I co-edited with Tamar Paluch. So I'll resort to brevity, you said. And you said there were 500 people in the crowd. And how what was their interaction like with each other and with you? We're going to ad break. We'll be back shortly.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Lee Kaufman. And you're also about to hear another short audio clip from the book Ruptured, and it's by Ruby Krona Tucci, Boiled Eggs.
Hi, I'm Ruby Krona Tucci. I'm a journalist, a writer, and I'm currently working as assistant editor of The Jewish Independent. I'm beyond honored to be one of the 36 incredible Australian Jewish women who have told their stories about life post-October 7 in Ruptured. As someone who comes from an intersectional background with Italian and Jewish ancestry, I've long wrestled with my identity and where I fit in the world. Being Jewish is something I've usually hidden, but when October 7 coincided with the death of my Sapta, my grandmother, I found writing about her and the experiences of anti-Semitism I've had to be a really cathartic process. My essay, called Boiled Eggs, is for anyone who maybe lives on the fringes of our community and has felt torn between being a good, palatable Jew and expressing how they really feel, including what it's like to navigate friendships with those outside of our community. I'm so honored to be part of this anthology, and I really encourage you to go out and buy a copy. The essays might surprise you, challenge you, even comfort you, and hopefully help you learn more about how diverse and nuanced our Jewish community is here in Australia.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Lee Kaufman, and we're talking about the new book, Ruptured, but we're actually also just talking about the feelings that came out after the 7th of October, the feelings of isolation in many cases. And I have found, certainly in South Africa, Lee, I don't know about in Australia, that the Jewish community have almost got even closer here to support one another and do things to support however we can different communities. And it's been actually very rewarding to see. And I was watching on the Bondi Beach clash. They called it a clash, but it actually was not too much of a clash, because there was not too much violence there. They always seem to talk about what's the worst thing. But there they were. You had the pro-Israel group. Actually, it was more against anti-Semitism group. And then, of course, you had the pro-Palestinian group. But I was quite amazed to see the mixture of the people who came out in support of against anti-Semitism.
Yeah, so I don't know enough details about what happened in Bondi, I'm sorry, but I love what you said before, Sue, about how in the face of all the difficult stuff that we're experiencing, we actually came close as a community, just as Ruby was saying and describing in her wonderful, wonderful essay. It's been the same thing for quite a lot of contributors. In the words of our contributor, Deborah Conway, who is a very well-known musician in Australia, we're all becoming more Jewy. So I, for example, you know how I said early on, I spend most of my time in Australia in this ivory tower of academia and arts community. And I actually hardly ever knew people in the Jewish community in Australia. And now I feel like I know so many since October 7. And it's been really enriching. And that's one of the things that really a lot of contributors experience. I mean, we have a lot of people in this book who are not what you would call like a typical Jew, like, intersectional Jew, or whatever word you can use to describe it. We have, for example, contributor Noi Harsel, who has both Jewish and Japanese heritage. And she also, like Ruby, has always wrestled with her identity. And so she, and just before October 7 happened, she took on the role of the CEO of the Jewish Museum of Australia, actually. And she writes beautifully. Yeah, she writes beautifully how she had concerns about how people may respond to the fact that somebody with mixed heritage, is a CEO of this museum. But she said as soon as October 7 began, she didn't worry about it at all. She was just a Jewish person who was experiencing loads and loads of anti-Semitism, mm-hmm. and that she had to deal with like threats to your workplace, et cetera, et cetera.
It has.
So it definitely clarified it a lot for many of us, who we are and, you know.
And my guest last week, Reverend Mark Leach, who runs that program in Australia, he was saying, you know, it's the 9th of October Jews. You know, it was after that. Uh-huh. I mean, the 8th, I think everyone was in absolute shock. Still by the 9th, also in shock. But that's when the Jews did start rallying around each other and supporting one another. Now, I saw that you said we were so moved to receive these images of the varsity students sharing the book Ruptured with federal MPs. And tell me about that. I mean, I love that. How did that come about?
That was amazing. I'll tell you in a second. But I just wanted to quickly also add something to what we just discussed about Jewish people coming together. I just want to add that another very beautiful thing, if you can say it beautiful, you know, but another light that came from all the darkness of post-October 7 life is, for me, and I think for a lot of other Jewish people I know, is that you really appreciate who are your friends outside of the Jewish community who stick by you and who get you what you're going through. Mm. And I must say, I feel very lucky because most of my friends who were non-Jewish, and most of my friends before October 7 were non-Jewish, they stuck by me. And some of them I even call honorary Jews because they really, thoroughly get what I'm going through. Some other friends don't quite, they're just there in empathy and just holding it at the space. But some really understand. But yeah, back to the book getting around. Our book is on a very incredible journey. It gets to places I never envisaged it would get. And one of them, what you're referring to, Sue, is that Australian Union of Jewish Students purchased copies of our book to give it to the Prime Minister Albanese and to about 20 MPs in a meeting with them to allow them to how tough it is for young Jewish people at universities at the moment. I mean, the stories you hear are extraordinary. We just listened to Ruby, one of our contributors, speak, and in her essay, one of the stories she tells, and I hope I'm paraphrasing it correctly, but she tells the story of her brother, who I think it was her brother who was told by somebody in a student function, somebody just didn't want to sit next to him because he found out that Ruby's brother was Jewish. I mean, how extraordinary is this? Mm-hmm. It's not just Germany; it's Australia in 2024.
Absolutely, I must admit I am very shocked, but I'm also very moved by the people who have reached out to me and to find out how my family are in Israel, and we'll get back shortly.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I've been with Lee Kaufman on my program. It's going very quickly. We're going to now listen to another audio clip from Ruptured, and it's by Jessica Barker, a message from my friend.
My story is about the unexpected friendships and silver linings that emerged after October 7, including my friendship with a Palestinian mother at my son's school, with an Australian-Israeli peace educator in Jerusalem, an Australian author with Palestinian heritage, and with three Jewish women in my community in Perth. These friendships have kept me afloat and given me so much hope during a very dark and devastating time. I hope that by sharing my story, it will encourage others to reach out and build bridges, to be curious even when you have a different opinion, to listen to each other and learn, and to find common ground and understanding. I'm really honoured to have my story featured in Ruptured. It's an incredibly moving and diverse collection of essays, and I hope you enjoy it.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Lee Kaufman. Lee's in Melbourne, and I'm in Johannesburg in the studio. Thank you, Craig, for keeping us on air. Lee, if people want to contact you, are you doing creative workshops or that people can join?
Absolutely, and I often teach online as well. I'm very contactable. I have a website, Instagram account, Facebook, LinkedIn.
Okay.
It's not hard to find me.
So they'll find
me as well. Yeah.
So they'll find you under. I'm going to find you as well on the Writers Workshop. Lee Kaufman. It's KOFMAN, and Lee is spelled LEE. And you can find her on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. She has got a very wide following, and she won even the best blogs. So she's worth listening to and getting in touch with. You know, that what you've just heard there was so true, that there is a common ground that we've got to also look for. And I think that's something that we often miss. And in the social media world that we're living in, Israel has definitely lost the media war. But all of us who have got a voice have got to use it for them in whatever way we can. And it's not in an angry voice. It's in a healing way. And, you know, Viktor Frankl, seeing you said you liked him, I love this quote of his. It says, pain is only bearable if we know it will end, not if we deny it exists. So we're not denying that we are all in pain, and we are all very shocked at this ongoing war. But we have to recognize that we do have choices here. What do you think your choices are here? Are we wrapping up? So you've got to just wrap up with a good choice.
I think our choices, do you mean our choices as Jewish people?
Yeah.
I think our choices are very few. I mean, I know that it's very dangerous to speak up at the moment. I mean, I received so much abuse that, you know, I can't count it anymore. But I think we just don't have the luxury at the moment to remain silent. That's what it feels to me like. And of course, I'm not telling anybody what to do, but I think it's really time for us to have conversations. And I really love something that our youngest contributor, who I mentioned before, Noa Gomberg, says, not in her essay, but she said when I interviewed her for one of our events, Noa said, It's enough looking for safe spaces. What we really need is brave spaces where we can hold a comfortable conversation. I know she's 16, isn't it remarkable? I was absolutely gobsmacked when she said that. Me too, isn't it? Brave spaces. So I really need. I told you I'll steal it from her. So I feel really the only way forward for us as Jews is not to retreat. It's great that we bonded more together as a community, and I love it, and I think we need to continue. But I also think we need to build these bridges. And really, what I'll say to end this topic, I know we're running out of time, but really Ruptured for me personally, and I think for Tamar as well, most of all, it's a bridge. It's a real bridge to talk to Jewish people, starting from our close circles and then expanding it
and
more
reaching
and more
out. It's like that pebble that you throw into the pond, and it all the ripple effects that go on and on and on. Let's hope.
Exactly. And a lot of our people who buy our book, they often buy a few copies to give it to non-Jewish people in
Wonderful.
Their lives.
It will be coming to South Africa soon, but if you want to get it already, you can on Amazon. Thank you so much for being with me, Lee. I've really enjoyed being with you today. We're going to end this. There's a song that's going to be played once we come off air, A Yid Never Dies. It won't be on the podcast, and you can pick up our podcast later on this afternoon. Thank you, Lee. Thank you, Craig. And thank you, Peterson.